Our next presenter, his name is Dr. Robert Pleasance. He is the Interpersonal Violence Prevention Coordinator at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He oversees UNC's prevention programming, teaches leadership and violence prevention in the Women's and Gender Studies Department, chairs the university's Sexual Assault Relationship Violence Training and Education Task Force, and works with survivors of sexual assault and relationship violence. He has also facilitated anti-sexist men's groups in Durham and currently serves on the North Carolina Sexual Assault or Sexual Violence Prevention Team. Bob?
Good morning. So my objectives today are to help us differentiate between individual level and multi-level violence prevention, to explain the necessity for this multi-level violence prevention on campus, and to describe key components of multi-level violence prevention on a college campus. So in a sense, it's sort of a case study. We're trying to develop a model on our campus, and this presentation is part of that process for us. Some brief stats. I'm not going to read through all of these. Probably skip every other one here. But we know that the latest CDC data tells us that 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men have been victims of severe physical violence by an intimate partner. The number 1 in 4 is often tossed around on college campuses. The third point here shows a recent study from 2009 that gives us the 1 in 5 number, 20% of women experiencing attempted or completed sexual assault while in college. High percentages, as you see in the second point, up to a third of students reporting dating violence as well. And the last point I think is really significant as well, because when we talk about interpersonal violence, we often focus on sexual assault, a little bit less on relationship violence, and stalking not as much on college campuses. But on our campus, this data is from our American College Health Association National College Health Assessment. We found that almost 4% of men and almost 7% of women reported being stalked. That was within the last 12 months on our campus. So those numbers are surprisingly high. I will say we try to actually ease up on the stats with students, because when you show stats to students, you probably know, they say, well, where did that come from? Or they say, this doesn't happen on our campus. We actually use clickers instead, and so we actually poll the room. If it's a big enough room, we'll ask how many people know someone, and we'll also ask if people have personal experiences so they can anonymously click in and give us that information. For participants in our programs, about 88% know someone, and almost 40% have experienced these things by themselves. So themselves. So there's no where did this data come from. This doesn't happen on our campus when you do that for our students. We also use personal narratives. So we have students, we borrowed this from the Green Dot program, have students write on the cards that we give them anonymously and share these quotes from students. So I just want to share one quick quote. This is from a student, and this is typical of what we get from almost every student who participates. I have been personally affected by interpersonal violence. I have been sexually assaulted, and some of my friends have been as well. It is a horrible thing to experience, but it makes me eager to do whatever I can to help prevent the perpetration of sexual violence. It is an enormous priority. And I say this because, as I said, we actually collect this data. We have IRB approval to collect this data. We get this from almost every student in the room who takes the training that we do. And I say that because there's sort of a common misperception that you have to force students or convince students to get involved in this issue. And what we found is actually they're really involved. If you approach them the right way and harness their energy, they're eager to help stop violence. So briefly, y'all are probably familiar with a lot of this, but primary prevention of violence, prevention is a long-term process requiring change at multiple levels of the community. We've previously talked about sexual violence prevention, especially on the college campus, as things that are really risk reduction, such as taking self-defense classes, watching one's drink, not walking alone at night, right? Not only are these things secondary prevention at best, they're in risk reduction, they also tend to focus on individuals, and they also often tend to focus on women and blaming the victim, essentially, and putting responsibility on women for ending sexual assault. Again, they're also individually based. The flip side of that is focusing on prevention programs for men, where you tell men not to rape, right? And if you've ever done that to a group of men, they don't like to hear that, right? And the truth is that, as I'll talk about in a second, the majority of men aren't rapists, right? So you position men as potential perpetrators, which makes them not want to be part of your movement. So we'll talk in a second about why the bystander approach is more inviting to everyone who's there. And just stressing the last point, that community effort is really important. If you're talking about primary prevention, you can't just focus on changing individuals and convincing them to change their individual behaviors. People are probably well familiar with this. It's been used in violence prevention and looking at the roots of perpetration. And that's good in order to think about why people are violent, or why men in particular are violent. And we're not able to get to all these points in our training program, but we are able to focus on some of the things in red. So use of alcohol comes up for sure. Delinquent peer associations, we really focus on positive peer associations instead. And also the approval of abuse and the culture of violence is okay. Part of the whole point of our training is to change the culture on campus to be more against violence and supportive of more positive pro-social behavior. So the last little bit of theory before I get into the specifics of our program is bystander theory. How many folks here are familiar with bystander theory? Okay, not everybody, so just wanted to make sure. So a lot of this is based on the work of David Lisak, who says that sex offenders are actually a fairly small portion of our population, but the majority of sex offenders perpetrate multiple times, right? So we have a high number of assaults, but a low number of offenders. And we know that individual-level programs aren't going to reach these offenders, right? Especially on a college campus, you're not going to be able to convince. And generally, when you do these on a college campus, for the broad outreach, you generally have maybe an hour, maybe up to 4 hours with somebody. You're not going to change a sex offender and convince that person not to to offend. But in addition to sex offenders, we also have facilitators, so people who intentionally or unintentionally help that sex offender perpetrate. So a classic example on a college campus would be at a party, a sex offender would have a friend who would help his victim get drunk, right? Feed the victim drink, and then the perpetrator would take advantage of that person. A much larger circle of people are bystanders, right? So at that party, there are probably dozens of people who are interacting in that room, who have the ability to potentially see that situation and do something to stop it. And so bystander programs on college campuses for violence prevention focus on bystanders as allies, approaching all students as allies and saying, if we train you to see the potential dangers of situations and the potential risk involved, then you can train you to be invested in that. Then we can also give you the skills in order to step in and prevent these things from happening. Other community-based, the goal is to change social norms, not just individual behaviors. They're strengths-based. Again, they're approaching students as allies and saying, we want to learn from you, and you're part of the solution. They're also skills-based because they can help teach specific skills that students can learn and walk away from. And they're also student-centered. So with our program, we don't tell students what the answer is. We give them a framework, and then they use their own answers within that framework developed to their personalities, situations, in order to know how to act in any given situation. There's promising but limited research on bystander programs. They're fairly new, so the research is now being created, but there is increased self-reported knowledge and self-efficacy in preventing violence. Recently, Banyard Moynihan Plant showed improvements in program participants' sexual assault knowledge, attitudes, and bystander behaviors. And then Ann Coker and her colleagues reported on the Green Dot program, more self-reported active bystander behaviors. Some limitations, though. Bystander programs, it's kind of the best you can do for primary prevention on the college campus. We know that it's still not really changing perpetrators from wanting to perpetrate in the first place, but we think on a college campus, the closest you can get to primary prevention that late in the life cycle is to approach everyone as allies and interrupt behaviors before they happen, if that makes sense. So I've been talking around it, but what our program is called One Act. So what is One Act? One Act is the comprehensive multi-level program that I want to talk about today for violence prevention at UNC Chapel Hill. So it's a couple of things. It is a student, when I I'll start in the middle. When I talk about the training, that's the thing that most students participate in, that has the most breadth across campus. So it's a four-hour peer educator led training. Actually, it's a hybrid model, so we have both professional staff and peer educators involved to sort of maximize the best of both worlds. But that's a four-hour training. We do have some supplemental trainings to go along with that, but that's the core of it. Also a student-led group, so peer educators as well as folks in events and planning and public relations are part of the student-led group behind that training. It's an acronym, so I talked about sort of the model that we have. We don't tell students what to do specifically, but our model is the things that you can do in a risky situation are ask for help, create a distraction, and talk directly. Acronym, not ACT, see? Again, instead of saying this is what you have to do, this is the model for it. It's also based on a leadership and violence prevention course, which is a full credit service learning course with community placement. So students are actually out in the community learning about this. So students who become peer educators have a really core foundational knowledge around this. Those students who are in the class then can take a peer educator training, so they have 30 hours of training. We also have a student advisory board, a campus and community task force, and do social marketing. So I'm going to try to quickly run through how we try to span the social ecological model here. So we started with the campus community task force. We did a community assessment as well, but really we started on the and actually, I'll say one thing as well. So we know the existence of programs like Green Dot, the men's program, Bring the Bystander. And to one degree or another, those programs sort of start with the curriculum and talk about how you adapt that to your campus. We sort of flipped the script a little bit and said, we want to start with our campus and figure out how to create a program and a curriculum that is adapted to our campus, if that makes sense. So we created a campus community task force, did a community assessment. When I came on board, I was the one person on campus with the task of preventing violence on campus, so I knew that was going to be a tough job. I knew that to get students involved, I had to help have some kind of incentive, so I created an academic class so that students could have credit for getting involved. That didn't take long for that to take off and the students to become really involved. In that class, that allowed, in the relationship level, networking of students, so students came together who realized other students cared about this. That helped really start gelling the group. From that group, we did two things. We created the curriculum for One Act. So we took a whole summer, two semesters worth of students, volunteered their time, did the research, looked at best practices, looked at all the curricula that were out there, and developed and wrote a curriculum for our campus. So it is research-based, it is theory-based, but it is also based specifically for our campus. We then power mapped to figure out who knew whom, who are the important students, who did we want in the room, and when we piloted it, we invited the people who we identified as thought leaders, as the most important people on campus, and we said, we want your help. You're important. We stroked them a little bit and said that stroked their egos and said that they're important. We need your feedback, gave them a special invitation to our pilot program. They showed up, and we also had powerful students. So when we did three pilot programs in the fall of October 2010, and from that, those student leaders then said, we want you to come to our groups and do this. So we already had, from that first pilot, students inviting us to come to them versus begging people to come to their group. The training itself is interactive, one thing that's important about that on the organizational level the training mostly trains groups who already existing on campus. So Young Democrats, for example, and we know that if you're the Young Democrat group on campus and we train you, you're doing this training together, you're hearing these things that are about social norming, you're hearing students' commitment to end violence, and so then when you go and party later on together, it's hard to then ignore it because you all can now hold each other accountable, and you know that you've been at this training, and you know that you've been at this training, and so you also know if you're going to speak out and ask for help, somebody will be here to support you. The students actually made it a student group, so students on campus, it's not a UNC Counseling and Wellness group. We actually waited until students were ready and wanted to claim it as their own to create a student group. We advised them, but they took ownership of that, so that showed student buy-in. We also created a student advisory board. to help us with that. As I said, the training really is based on collaborative community design and really is based on strengthening those bonds between students and pre-existing groups. And then lastly, on the community and society level, we do social marketing campaigns, so to supplement the message and that training, both to get people into the training and then to sort of buffer the training messages, we have things like these messages across campus. We have follow-up events during Relationship Violence Awareness Month and Sexual Assault Awareness Month. We have more and more trainings for pre-existing groups. We have advertisements, these things called glass cubes right in the middle of our student union, as well as bus posters. Just to sort of reiterate our community approach, that we convened a community and campus task force. We recruited students through Leadership and Violence Prevention course. We then collaborated with them in creating this. We also collaborated with faculty and staff, so after students created it, we also got feedback from professionals and faculty on campus to review it. We piloted it and then, of course, did tweaking and process evaluation. We're evaluating it now, so we don't have data yet. We're actually in the process. The whole last year we've done outcome evaluation, and we're working on that, processing that data right now. We trained over 1,000 students since November 2010, which is still a relatively small percentage of our large campus, but a good number considering it's a four-hour training. We have brand recognition. If you ask students if they know what One Act is, in a room, I'd say roughly 70 to 80% will raise their hand. We also hear them using it as a verb and owning it, so they talk about one-acting each other, right? So if somebody's about to do something sketchy, somebody else can one-act them. My favorite story is hearing that students have, we give them sort of placards or stickers to put on their laptops or outside of their rooms, that students have laminated these and put them in their punch bowl at parties to say this is a safe party, or they'll put that on their Facebook invite to a party, this is a one-act party, just to give people a heads up that, no funny business is tolerated. And so far, we've got great self-reported data in the process evaluation. Again, we'll have outcome data hopefully at the end of this year. Lastly, beyond the things that I talked about, we've had a lot of great support. I wrote a rape prevention education grant to bring on a staff member who helped develop that curriculum with students. That was important. We've got great support from our campus safety and security committee, which has an $80,000 budget on our campus. It's a huge wealth of money. If you just approach students, they can help support lots of great things. And lastly, I just wanted to reiterate students and students' students. Getting students involved from day one has really been important in ensuring student buy-in and the success of our program, because if staff and faculty are trying to push something on campus, it's an uphill battle. If students want to see something happen, it will happen on campus. Thank you.